bringing it back. A home is only as good as its foundation. We're here with Arizona Foundation Solutions founder and president, Mr. Bob Brown. If you can't get in today's show, we do have most of the lines filled right now. His number at the office is 602-702-5390. Let's get to the calls.
And a foundation may only be as good as the soil under it, too.
I still want to get back to the 10 things homeowners need to know about hiring and putting on a foundation repair inspector. We never even got to point one and two, but let's get to some of these calls. They've been very patiently holding on. Romy, where are we going to start? Jason with a question on radon. Good morning, Jason. Welcome to Rosie on House. Let me introduce you to Bob Brown of Arizona Foundation Solutions.
Hi, how are you doing this morning?
Very well.
My question is regarding radon. We're looking right now, me and my wife are wanting to build a home out in an old pecan farm out in the Southeast Valley. And it's very close to an old capped landfill. And my question is, the home and the lot we're looking at is about 600 feet away from that. Do you see an increased risk of radon in an area like that? Or is there a way to do a test pre-construction?
That's a good question.
Well, you can test it, but it really is not effective. I mean, the only way you're going to really know is after you build the house, then test it, because there's just too many variables, and the EPA doesn't recommend testing lots to try to figure that out ahead of time. Now, to your first question, the landfill doesn't really pose any greater risk for radon. However, there may be other gases that you might need to be worried
methane.
About. Methane and other kinds of things.
Sure. There could be,
you know, and the radon systems will, or the evacuation systems will solve those problems just like they do radon.
Well, then I guess I would have a second question. We were thinking about foaming our outside walls. Would you say that may even be a more of an imposed risk by doing that?
Most LEED certified homes, well insulated homes, are using foam today, Jason. It really is an excellent way for the money invested to accomplish a very significant thermal barrier to your outside. The question is, when we seal the house up that tight, are we creating a higher risk of radon? And yes, you are.
Right.
But I'd rather a sealed house where if it's a problem, we get in and mitigate it with your system.
Right. And you can actually, one of the things you might want to think about is you can install, if you're building it new, install a passive system. Install the piping. And then when you test it, if it still tests high, then all you have to do is add a fan, which is pretty cheap to do.
Now, that's an excellent idea.
A lot of builders, if he's buying his blueprints, are not going to have this. Can he work with you to get this drawn in? Do you have plans
sure.
you can send him that he can help?
Absolutely. It's really easy to
builder.
Do. And it's really super inexpensive while you're building a house. I mean, it's going to add less than $1,000 to your costs.
Just get it done, and then we
right.
can attach a fan to it later if we
right.
need to.
Congratulations on the new home, Jason. As Rosie and Bob mentioned earlier, building over citrus fields, the same problem building over the pecan fields. The moisture for the years and years and years of irrigation, and then to cut it off and have no moisture underneath. You know, that's get your soil test due while you're done with that. And you
right.
mentioned foam. Just so long as you're foaming between blocks and not sticks, you're going to have a great house.
Right. Get a geotechnical engineer to do your analysis. A lot of people skip that step, but that would be vitally important, and particularly in this case.
Hang tight. We'll make sure we get you all those resources off the air. Let's go to Bill in Tucson. Wants to talk about his home. Oh, a second home in Sholo.
Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You betcha.
Yeah, it's a second home up in Sholo, and it's built. It's basically a duplex. It's two-story. And it's, you know, on a slab, and it has a crack running about, 6 to 8 inches inside the back wall in the slab all the way down, all the way across the house. And it's about about 3/8 to a half inch wide, the crack. When you pull the carpet back, you can see it. And is there a first question, is there a way to fix that?
Do we know, Bill, one more question. Do we know, does the crack continue through to your neighboring duplex?
Yes.
All the way across the back of the building. Okay, Bob?
Right. Well, so cracks in slabs happen for a couple of different reasons, and you'd want to make sure that you understand those reasons before we start applying fixes. Can you fix the crack? Sure, yeah, we can stitch the crack. That's easy.
Right.
But why is the crack occurring? That's what we want to think about. You know, we don't want to start applying solutions before we know the problem, before we know the mechanism. And it could be that you've got one side of the duplex going down. It could be the slab is heaving up from clays. It could be either way, and we'd want to make sure we understand that mechanism before we start talking about fixes.
Right.
So what do y'all do in that case? How do y'all determine what it is, Bob?
Well, we follow a set of guidelines that's been put out by the Foundation Performance Association called Level B Investigation. And it involves a floor-level survey, so that's where we come in and take a manometer, and we measure the levelness of the floor, and we map it out with a topo program. We overlay that with where the damage is, the cracks that you're speaking of, or other cracks in other walls and windows and doors. And then we run a deflection analysis that tells us how bad is it. Is it really bad? Is it a little bit bad? And then we write a report, and it's stamped by our civil engineer. And so now we have something that will tell us what's going on and what we need to do to fix it.
And in a duplex situation, would you want the participation of your neighbor and do the entire footprint of the building?
That is almost always preferable. Sometimes you can't get that, but if you can, that is the way to do it. Because really, if you have one side of your slab down, that may be one thing, but if it's down on the opposite side, that means something else entirely different. So you're only getting half the picture, and you might misinterpret it without the whole footprint of the building.
So for a manometer test on a property in Sholo, what would Bill expect to have to spend for something like that?
I would think it would be about $650 to go to Sholo from Phoenix.
Okay, and get the test done, get all the results,
right,
and then know from that point, what do we do now?
Right. So then we have an engineer's recommendations that says, here's the problem. Here's the recommended solution, rather than just going out there and blindly applying solutions without really understanding the problem.
If Bill can get his neighbor in the duplex to participate,
right,
can they split that 3.25 each, and it's going to be about $650 total?
It might be a little bit more, but yeah, you'll save money by doing it that way.
Okay.
Okay. Great.
Bill, it's 602-702-5390, Arizona Foundation Solutions. 90% of my experience with foundation failure in Arizona happens between Sholo and Hannigan Meadow.
Right.
We've literally had to pick a building up that had sunk 4 feet.
Right.
And move it 250 feet down. That was probably one of the most fun, exciting projects I've ever done, because I've never picked a building up and reset it down. It was actually fun.
Now, you have a Tucson location. Do you want them to call there or Phoenix? I mean, do you know which location you'd be sending somebody from?
Well, if it's in Sholo, it doesn't matter. Call Phoenix.
About 5 hours either way.
Yeah. It's a little more from Tucson. So call Phoenix for Sholo. That'd probably be the best way.
Okay.
And you do operate statewide.
Correct.
We need to make that clear, too.
Absolutely.
There's hardly a corner of the state you haven't been to.
Yep.
Okay, good, because we have other questions from other areas. Again, we're going to go back up to the White Mountains. Dave wants to talk about a question for a home in Heber. Good morning, Dave.
Hi there. So I've got about a 1,600-foot cabin. I don't know the technical term, but it's built and supported with 6x6-inch beams on little concrete pylons, offset about every 10 feet. Underneath, there's a crawl space. I keep my motorcycles, my quad, my outboard motors. So I'm about 5'11". The slats, the 2x12 slats that come down, are about 5.5 feet. So I'm always knocking my head. My question is, am I safe in digging out the dirt 6 inches to a foot down to create more headroom and not disrupt the concrete pylon support, the compacted dirt, whatever?
Oh, well, it's a complicated question. It's going to be hard to answer without knowing a lot of the variables, but you want to be careful digging around posts, okay? Hopefully they have footings, but if they don't, then that's really scary. if you
yeah, they've got the concrete pylons. They've got the footings.
Yeah, I know you have the concrete pylons, but they generally need a either a rock pack or a footing underneath those, because those pylons are just sitting on top of dirt with nothing underneath them. And they really need to have footings under them. Most of them don't, unfortunately. And even if you do have a footing, then you draw a 45-degree angle line through the dirt, imaginary line, away from the footing, and that's the area that you can disturb. So eventually it gets pretty small unless you want to dig deeper supports for your footings. Then you can solve the problem that way, but that's a little more work.
Dave, I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to get Jennifer back on the phone with you, make sure we've got your phone number. I actually have to run to Nutrioso, Arizona. I have to drive right through Heber to get there, and I'm actually going to the building that we picked up and moved. We set some benchmarks when we moved the building about 5 years ago, and they've actually asked me to come back up with my transit and reshoot to make sure we're stable. So I'm going to be going back up to Nutrioso Bible Church, which is the building we moved, here in the next week or two. And when I do, I'll run by your house in Heber and let me look at the situation. We can explore options on how you can gain that 6 inches of additional headroom. All right, we appreciate the call. From there, let's get down to Harlan calling from Chandler, and it'll be Nancy in Paradise Valley with an open line for you, 1-888-767-4348. Let's take this question real quick, and then I want to go back to the 10-point report y'all have on what to expect from a foundation inspection analysis. Harlan, good morning. Welcome to Rosie on the House.
Good morning. I'll make this quick for you.
Great.
Perfect timing. I have a house being built by one of the major builders here in the valley. Standard post-tension slab under the one section of the front of the house. It happens to be the porch. I noticed a little gap between the bottom of the slab and the earth. And as I peek down, it looks like it's empty under there, like something caved in or loosened up. I mean, I can put a stick between the bottom of the slab and the earth. When I mentioned it to the superintendent, he very calmly said, oh, yeah, not an issue. When we grade your yard, we'll just tack some earth under there. Is that enough to support? He said, it's a floating slab anyway. Is that enough to support this, or is something going to snap off, or is the tension, the post-tension, hold it all together anyway? Or do I have to worry about this one little corner of the house that I don't visually see any dirt? It's not resting on anything. It's like a little hollowed out part underneath.
I know how I would respond to that. Bob, well, how are you going to respond to that?
Well, I mean, I'm having a hard time picturing how big this is. Post-tension slabs are floating slabs, and they will span small openings of earth without any problem at all. But what I would be worried about is, see, post-tensions, when they tighten those up, the slab actually shrinks. It actually pulls in. And if it can't move, if there's friction, if there's too much friction with it when they pull it, that's going to restrict the movement of the slab when they tighten it up. And so therefore, your post-tension cables won't do what they're designed to do. So that's the only thing I would be worried about. But it's hard for me to kind of visualize what it is you're saying. If you want to send me a picture of it, I'll be glad to email you back.
Where would he send that picture to?
bbrown@azrm.net.
Quick right. question. If you're building your house today, would you do post-tension or conventional pour?
I probably would not do post-tension. I'm not a big fan of the post-tension slabs. I know that that's standard fare for the builders nowadays, and all the talk that goes with it, but post-tension slabs, in my opinion, offer problems that you get without standard foundations. They heave very easily.
All right. When we get back, I want to address your article, 10 Things Homeowners Need to Know in Hiring a Foundation Repair Inspector.